Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
And good night.
And Saif, you don't want me to play the song that I was going to play?
No, not that one. You got to save that for later.
All right.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Juan Epp is Dead podcast with your host, Cypher Sounds, and Peter Rosenberg. Not even your hosts. Host makes it sound like it's someone else's show.
No, we're just, your friends.
We're just hosting. Yeah, your friends.
Thank you
for all the love on the Patreon. Thank you for all the likes, shares.
I don't think you have to say
reposts, all that good shit.
I don't know if you have to say Patreon.
Patreon.
Or how about this for to start with?
Once again, Kanye West.
Yes, I did. So I packed it up and brought it back to the crib. Just a little something to show you how we live. Everybody want it, but it ain't that serious. That's that. So if you're gonna do it just like this. Like.
Do you remember when you used to play that one?
I love that one. I still play it.
You still play it?
Yeah.
The Live's
that's a
good
a banger.
One.
That's a banger. That's one of my favorite non-single Kanye West songs.
That's one of my favorite things to make fun of DJ Cass. I call him DJ Live 1. I've never known a DJ who loves the live version as much as Cass 1.
He loves a live version.
Loves a lot. He gets them all. Like when someone's on SNL, you know you're going to hear the SNL performance. He loves it.
He loves a live version.
And I really respect it because a lot of people don't pay attention to recording the live versions. Now they're so easy to get on YouTube.
Right.
Go get yourself a live version. Saif, how are you today?
I'm pretty good, man. I've been trying to... I got vaccinated yesterday.
Wait, so you're scamming the system?
What do you mean scamming the system?
You can't be up for a vaccination right now.
What do you mean?
You can't legally be up for a vaccination.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, yeah. Okay, here's the great thing about my current weight situation.
You're still obese.
I am obese, therefore qualified for a vaccination.
Oh, this is such good news. Congratulations.
This is beautiful. All that weight I lost during pandemic, and then I gained some back, and it got me the vaccine.
That is hilarious, and I believe you. Like, that's how they were doing.
I'm in danger. I'm in danger.
You're in danger right now.
Yo, let me tell you something. First, the Fat Boys break up.
Yo, rest in peace, by the way, to Prince Marky D.
Oh, yeah, man. We didn't even say that.
We didn't even get to spend time. We should do a... Honestly, we should do a real Fat Boys episode one day. I was thinking about a few...
The story is crazy.
It's amazing. There are a few people I was thinking of that we've never really done much on.
Oh, I got in touch with Kid from Kid and Play. We got to do that story.
No, Kid and Play, we definitely need to do.
We need Heavy D and we need Fat Boys. Those are three super underrated...
You know who else?
Groundbreaking hip hop.
And the last one I'm gonna throw in that category, and I never see interviews with this guy, so we have to find it, make it happen. Cool Mo D.
You know what's funny? I was just thinking that because when we were playing Self-Destruction a couple weeks ago and Cool Mo D's verses on there, like, I don't know anything about Cool Mo D. I know nothing.
And it's kind of crazy, too, because you get the Treacherous 3 story. So me and my girl have been watching Snowfall. Have you watched Snowfall?
No, I want to get into it.
Amazing. It shouldn't have been on FX. That's the problem.
Well, it should have been on like a HBO or Netflix.
It should have been on one of the ones that's considered like premium, because it's premium. It's that good.
Right.
The acting.
Is that John Singleton?
Yeah. R.I.P. Uh-huh. The acting, the look, the story, it's all premium,
okay,
high level ish.
Yeah, I'm gonna check it out. That'll be my next.
But
show
they use Treacherous 3 a lot because it takes place in 83, 84. And so they cut to a lot of scenes where they're switching scenes and you hear Treacherous 3. And so I started thinking about Cool Mo D last night, and I'm like, man, he takes you all the way back. He covers an era that we miss a lot. He could give us the full late 70s, early 80s, but then it continues, and he can kind of get you all the way up to like 90.
Right. And Cool Mo D and Houdini to me are two... They're similar. Like, Kumo D is a solo artist, and then Houdini is, like, to me, like, the same kind of sound, but they were a group.
Yep.
But, like, you hear how our favorite rappers were so influenced by Kumo D and Houdini, and it's just, I don't know. It's nobody touches
I used to wonder about, like, when will I be large like Houdini?
Yo, fuck. Yo, like, Fat Boy, like, Disorderlies is a funny
So I had
movie.
The exact same conversation when he passed. I, like, made sure to stress that on the radio. I was like, just so you guys know, Disorderlies is good. Like, it's really funny movie. They were funny.
And then they kill it in Crush Groove. You know what I mean? They're, like, good actors.
The Fat Boys were big. And now... Thanks to the work that you've put in during quarantine, boom, you're in it and you got the vaccine. Yo, I want to take this time on one ep to congratulate you for being obese.
Thank you. Yo, this brings me joy to talk to you in the morning times when we do this podcast, but I'm on a bender, yo.
Are you gonna go in right now and be honest? To be real, get deep here.
I'm in a depressed. But that I'm actually coming out of it. But the amount of fast food.
No.
I've been on some self-destruction.
Oh, ever since we played self-destruction or before that.
And I don't know what before that. I don't know why. I don't know what's happening. I had a therapy session. I'm trying to figure it out. But like, I'm on some like. To a day type.
Oh
shit! Like,
this is hold on. So if you were, oh no! So you know what's happening right now? You're the equivalent of and this is I'm joking, but I am serious. You are like a drug addict who had been clean, and when they fall back off, it's when they die, because they go so. Oh. I don't think you'll die immediately, but
no,
it's when they were like, they were so clean for 6 months.
Because
you're going in even harder. But then at the same time, you were just telling me before we went on the air about how you're like trying to figure out TikTok. And to me, and listen, we're not the same, although we do have similarities. I just think we had different uses of our the things we did to make ourselves feel better are different. But for me, there's a direct line between the amount of social media engagement I'm doing and how I feel. So I'm surprised. I wonder if that...
Does that mean you're doing
when
a lot?
When I'm doing a lot, I'm not doing as well as a person. Yes.
Personally,
I'm not present.
Right. Wait, and you're doing a
lot
of social
media
now? No, I mean,
literally this week, I had like one day where I got into a classic me, weighed in on a topic for no reason. Like, I need to use social media. I don't know how you feel. Don't get me wrong. I think you're affected by social media different than me in a different way. I think that we are probably both affected by it. I don't think that yours is the exact same as mine. Like, I have two or three ways that social media negatively affects me. One, and this, I love this terminology, comparing your inside to other people's outside. That's what social media is, because you're seeing a made up farce version of what everyone else is doing, but I naturally am psychologically comparing it to really me. And it's not fair, because you're not comparing your inside to someone else's inside, which would be stupid in the first place, but it's not even that. You're comparing it to the fake version they're putting up on the internet. I have...
Right, yes, yes. I'll scroll, and once I start getting like this little anxious anger feeling, I immediately get off Instagram.
The question would be, is at that point too late?
Like...
Because you might have already started the spiral. Yes.
But like DJ Camillo, like...
Go ahead.
I hate him.
Right, because he has a great social media brand, and it's... Happy, his, working, party.
He's working out. He's yo, 5 months, 5 months in the gym, getting my summer body ready. And then you see his, I mean, gorgeous wife. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's married to a triple supermodel, gorgeous human being. He's got great kids. He's in his basement with his dope record collection and his ring light, killing it.
And
on the
anytime
radio
he goes on IG
on
Live, there's 1,000 people there. Everything he does. I mean,
and then now he's like going to the cities that are open and back DJing in clubs. Like, I think he's in Florida right now. Just. And I look at him, I'm like...
And he's a great one for you to compare yourself to, because people literally confused you. Like, you guys were like, hey, Camillo, I mean Cypher Sounds.
I remember when me and Camillo were on the exact same level. I remember when... I was at Hot 97 before him.
wait, so you mean you have the full memory of this?
At Hot 97, I felt like...
I'm taking my hand and having it pass the other. You watched it. You were looking over your shoulder like, whew, this Colombian kid from Queens, he's pretty good. I better keep running. And then y'all ran next to each other. You ran next to each other for a long time. And you were friends. And you're friends. You love the guy. Camillo.
Long time.
We're doing real good, right? Hey, Camillo. Camillo.
Camillo. Yo, and then I remember when he got the job at Hot 97, and I was like, this is a real one.
Oh, and Camillo's
like,
so such a real, and when it comes to hip hop,
got the job.
Camillo's, you know, the he's us. He is. I don't know if Camillo's ever listened to Juan Epp, but like he should. He is Juan Epp. Like, he's the real deal.
Yo, he is Juan Epp. Yo, he used to DJ for the Beat Nuts. And then I remember one time. His early career, he invited me to this party in Queens, and it was
Casablanca. Okay, I couldn't. I didn't understand at first. I thought you said Casablanca. Okay, all right.
No, Casablanca. And I walked into this club, and he was tearing down Onyx, Throw Your Guns. And it was like, you know when you have a couple of those vivid memories of moments in your life? For they're not big moments in my life, but I just remember it so clearly that I walked in and he was cutting up Throw Your Guns.
I don't think the place
was going badonkers. And I was like, this guy's fucking...
Well, Camillo's that good. He can play anything and it works everywhere.
Here's
it's a great setup to get
Camillo
on the show, though.
I don't know why this is a Camillo episode now. I'm going to tell you my problem with Camillo. And I told him this. Oh, let's not forget the guy is doing parties. You know, he's doing nine parties.
Wait. When the world's open, he's doing more
than... 7 days in a week. You guys are clear on that, right? Sometimes 10, 11 parties.
No, that's...
There'd be a party. He'll be
for
like...
For those of you
I'm
guys
in Jersey
who don't
from 11:30
live
to
here
12,
or
15.
See his flyers or follow him, there are weeks when Camillo does 14 parties. And he's not kidding. My Tuesday night schedule, and crazy. You look at it, it has three clubs. And by the way, Camillo throws people clubs. A bone, I'm it's sure, nuts. Every once in a while. But for the most part... People know what they're paying to get Camillo to walk in the room for 45 minutes.
Oh, and let me tell you something. The guy is worth every penny. He tears it down. And he has, I know girls, this is from my, you know, I'm not in hip hop anymore. I've moved on. I know girls that will only go
but if Camilo's,
to Camilo parties. Like, they're not party girls. You know what I mean? They're like, they have jobs, they have kids. But then they'll be
I'm,
like,
I'm calling
oh, Camilo's
him right
at
now, just
this
second.
Club in Jersey.
I want to see, because me going. Calling him on a random Sunday, he should think someone's dead. He should be... Oh, straight to voice. Oh my God, Camilo. Thanks, Camilo. So wait, you were saying though.
So I know girls, they'll just go to Camilo parties, you know? And he has that following. But wait, what was I saying? Because I talk about how I hate him so much. Oh, my problem with Camilo is he should be a worldwide superstar DJ. You know what I mean? Like a
no. Like so yes, 100% for a million reasons he should be. However, here's the thing. I like that he's a real, like, yes, he is the international club kingpin. Don't get it twisted. He does gigs everywhere. But he is sort of the definition of a real local New York star, and I respect that. He's the definition of very famous in New York.
Yes.
DJ's no Camilo, but in terms of regular people, he's a star here. You're right, though, because when you think about how good he is, he's good looking, he's got a beautiful, charming family. Like, he could do it all. I want to circle back after our interview and talk about the internet. And then I have two stories from the week that I need to tell you.
Okay.
That I need your feedback.
Right. I'm ready.
I need your input on what actually happened. And I need your review of how I handled the situation.
Love it. Love it.
All right. So let's bring on our guy right now. All the way live from 215. Okay.
Oh, shit.
You know? Hold on, wait for it. Wait for it. It's probably still counting bags. You thought I would play some underground Battle Cassidy shit here? No. We're going for the club shit off top.
Hey, why not?
Cassidy the Hustler.
Cassidy, what up, son?
Cypher Sounds, Rosenberg. What's up with y'all, man? Good morning.
Yo, just hearing your voice reminds me of shit I forgot from me and Sife's old era on the radio, of that, like, we had you on the radio with us a few times. I kind of forgot until I just heard your voice. I'm like, oh yeah, Cassidy, we did do that.
Yeah, we got history, man. You know, I got a lot of years in, man. So we could,
and
you
now,
know, we could
and now you're doing memory lane. And now you're doing fashion shoots for the Tiger Woods collection.
No, he's going to play tennis at Wimbledon. He's got a match at Wimbledon today.
This is a very clean.
Yeah.
This is a very clean look you got there, Cassidy.
Yeah, you know, I'm feeling good today, man. It's a nice day outside, man.
Are you in Philadelphia?
Not right now. I'm in Atlanta.
Oh, Atlanta. Yes, where all rappers go.
For sure. Black Hollywood right
yo,
now.
Yo, the
man.
Amount of rappers that I see when I go to Atlanta is crazy. So,
yeah. This is where the energy at, man. This is where you need to come to get a vibe.
I was in Atlanta doing shows with Dave Chappelle. I was hanging out with 2 Chainz, T.I., Killer Mike, West Side Gunn and Benny, Diamond D.
Yep.
Fuck yeah. I was
well,
like,
and by the way, everyone,
down here, yo.
I know there's a deep history. Oh, by the way, Cassidy, our annoying producer, who we would love if you'd punch him in the face when you meet him, is asking if you could turn your phone horizontally. We should all pay homage. And I know there's a deeper history, obviously, with black people moving to Atlanta.
Yeah.
But as far as hip-hop goes, we need to take a moment and salute Fife Dawg and Eric Sermon.
Uh-huh. Were they the first ones?
The New York to Atlanta hip-hop thing?
Right.
That goes back. I think Fife moved down there before Midnight Marauders.
Right.
I think it was Low End Theory he moved down there.
Shout out to Eric Sermon, man. That's my bro, man. Told me a lot.
Do you ever see Eric Sermon in Atlanta?
Actually, I ain't seen him out here in Atlanta yet. I seen him a lot up top though.
He used to have a rim spot, I know, in Atlanta. That was a thing, right, Sife?
Yeah, that was a thing.
Cassidy has a new project, The Wise Man.
Okay.
He's back at it again.
I actually, I got three of them. I just dropped three projects in the last 5 months.
So wait,
trying to make history.
This is
on
a series.
Yeah, that was the third one. The first one was The Science. I dropped that in October of last year. December of last year, I dropped another project called The Formula. And then I just recently dropped The Wise Man.
Syph, I just realized this moment something fascinating about Cassidy.
What's that?
He has done every version, not every, but so many versions of hip-hop successfully. He's done battling, like true battle rap, successfully.
Yep.
Yep. He's done the underground Philly street shit successfully.
Yep.
He went on a straight up commercial, girls in videos, big budget, record industry when CDs were being sold successfully.
Correct.
And now he's doing the digital streaming with his own fan base.
Yeah, independent.
Successfully. Independent. You've seen every version of this hip hop shit. How is this version working out for you? How do you like the streaming version of this?
It's pros and cons, ups and downs. The good thing about streaming is being able to get your music out to your fan base instantaneously. Like back in the day, you used to have to require large budgets to be able to get to your fans in other places where you wasn't at.
Right.
So if I had a fan base in Africa, how was I able to get my albums over to Africa if I never even been to some of these places with people like me in Africa? How would you get a record in a record store in Africa?
Right.
It would just require relationships. It will require
distribution,
shipping,
yeah,
traveling. Yeah, just it requires a lot. So for an independent artist to be able to get all of them type of relationships, it would take so long.
Yeah.
That's why you got to partner up with these machines and stuff like that in order to be able to be effective globally.
Right.
But now with this technology, you can just upload it to one of these platforms and the whole world can get it at the same time, no matter if you're in Australia, Africa, Asia, North America, South America. Everybody can hear it all at the same time. So that's the benefit of it. And it makes it a lot easier to do, and it's cost efficient. Mm-hmm. Like back in the day, it used to be expensive to go in the studio and put projects together. Now everybody got a studio practically in a house where you could pretty much make music, and to get it out, it don't
high
cost millions
too
of dollars.
Yeah, high quality.
Like back in the day when I got in the business, everybody was talking about going gold or platinum. Everybody was just screaming that out their mouth when actual physical records were selling. But people ain't realize if you wanted to go gold or to go platinum, you would have to have 500,000 CDs printed up to go gold.
Yeah.
You would have to have 1 million CDs actually made if you wanted to sell 1 million CDs to go platinum.
Yeah, that's true.
So to get CDs printed up, if they was $2-3 a CD and you needed 1 million of them, that's $2-3 million that you need aside of recording, aside of marketing and promotion, aside of your advances and
right
all of your promotional tour and all of that. I'm talking about aside of all of that, you still need $2-3 million
yep
ahead of time.
That's crazy.
To invest into an artist. But they don't be considering those type of numbers. You just think you just go in the studio, make music, and you just eat. Like, you know what I'm saying? But now that technology improved, you can record better and you can get your music out. So that's the advantage. But with that advantage is a disadvantage because now you got billions or more rappers. Back in the day, people didn't want to take that risk because it was so expensive and it was so hard to do, that everybody wasn't willing to
there
take
is no
that
risk.
Risk. But now with the technology and how easy it is, and then with the business putting out these artists that don't seem that developed, everybody feel like they could do it now.
Yeah.
So now it's a lot more competition. So you definitely got to be about
the point
business
of entry
in order to separate
is the thing I'm very interested in, because
now
the point of entry to be in hip hop is completely different. Anyone can get in. So you're right. The floodgates are open. You had to be committed just to getting studio time, just to even, like we were talking about Biggie last week, Biggie being able to get with 50 grand to record the demos required him at least knowing someone who had a setup just to get that bullshit sounding demo. Yo, and it sounded like shit. But just to get to that, you had to know someone.
Yeah, some kind of little 4-track recorder, you know what I mean? Just to get the little demo that the source heard to put him in the unsigned hype. Like, it was a mission to find someone who had a little basement 4-track machine and a microphone and a turntable set up.
So, but here's my question. To be honest with you, on Hot 97 all the time, we talk about like, today Drake broke the record. He broke the Beatles record for this, and this one broke. And I'm not asking you to agree with me. You can feel however you feel. I don't take the records of today seriously in the same way. Like, when you tell me that Drake had 10 singles sell a gazillion copies each and he surpassed the Beatles, I'm like, but hold on. When the Beatles sold their singles, cats were going to the store and buying each record individually. So if they had 7 singles on an album, those 45s are in the world right now. There's millions of them. They're all got pressed. And so while I'm still impressed with people who do numbers, Cass, do you have any feeling that you're like, yo, it's cool that y'all have done that, but no, like, for example, what was the most you sold with one of your albums?
My first album, Split Personality. So the most whole album.
And what did it sell? How many did it sell?
Yeah.
I'm not sure now, but I know it was gold when I first dropped it. So by now,
so hundreds.
You know, all of these years, it's probably did something different. But
so more than 500,000 copies of the CD were purchased.
Physical yes. copies.
So does it ever make you feel like, yo, it's cool that you were able to get a gazillion streams, but do you have a different level of respect for the cats who are able to move physical product on a high level?
I think a lot of the artists is confused either way. Like, a lot of artists is not understanding how they streaming and doing good now. And a lot of artists wasn't really understanding how they were selling records back in the day. It was the people that was behind them in the machine, and they was just making music. So a lot of artists ain't really understand how the business was going, regardless if it was now or back in the day. You know what I'm saying? And it's a different strategy. Like, some of these artists that might be streaming a lot now might not be making the type of quality music that we was used to when physical records were selling. But that's because they don't got the team. They don't go through artist development, and they don't put as much energy into like one single and one project like they used to back in the day. Now, with this technology, it's about consistency. Like, you know what I mean? It's like it's quantity, not quality no more. Back in the day, it used to be quality. You had a quality album. That joint will last forever. You could keep stretching them singles and making that project work forever. You can tour and be a legend forever if you had a classic album. Now, it's like, they hear your album real quick. They go through it. Now they want some more. They want some more. They want the visuals. They want you to do a bunch of stuff. They want to, it's just like their attention span is shorter. So you got to be more consistent nowadays. So you can't expect the artist to be in the studio making that same type of music as they used to, if they could get to a bag a different way, especially when 99.9% of the people that's in the industry only do it for a bag. They don't really care about the culture or the rules or regulations. They do it for business. So if they figured out another way to make money that's easier, why would you expect them to take the harder route?
Right. They're not doing it for the art.
By the same token, what do you think of the battle rap game now, which has leagues and some real money that exists for cats who are successful? How do you view that versus the late 90s, early 2000s battle scene?
You are asking some good questions, Peter.
Come on, Miss Cassidy.
You are an interviewer.
I think I made that that possible. Like, all of these leagues that exist came because of the work that I was putting in at one time, like making battle rap popular, making certain industry people and people that even wasn't in the streets hear about battle rap. With me and Freeway Battle, that was like before social media and the internet and all that, but that was like a form of going viral. Like, it just swept the world. Everybody was talking about it. And that's what made people interested in seeing people battle like that, especially names that they know. It just made people figure out that it was money in it. So I knew it was going to be leagues that was going to start and people was going to start investing in battle rap. I knew that that was going to happen. And I knew that it was going to grow and get big. I just ain't know how long it was going to take. So battle rap is like one of my favorite parts of hip hop. I love when artists is competitive and showing that you better than the next one. When I came up, all the rappers was talking about that they the best and these sucker MCs can't mess with me. And you was always just bigging yourself up and dissing everybody else that wasn't you. And I liked that energy. That's why I fell in love with hip hop. So I don't want that to die out. So that's why I still love battle rap, even though I feel as though it's more commercialized now because there's money into it. They on stage now. They paying these artists. So it's a business. So it is more commercial than it used to be in the 90s, but it's still a more purer, rawer form of hip hop than what you hear on the radio.
Why is the transition so hard? You're one of the very few battle cats. And obviously it's different when you go back to the early 80s, but in the modern era, you're one of the few battle cats to be able to make commercially viable music. Why is that line so hard? Because, Syph, we've met mad battle rappers who brought their projects up, and the raps are good, and it just doesn't quite connect. Have you been able to pinpoint why that is and why you were able to figure it out?
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot of reasons, so I'll be here all day, but I'm going to give you a quick one. One of the reasons is a lot of the great battle rappers that's ranked high that people got on the top of their list, a lot of them do a thing that's considered to be cheating. Like when they write their bars, if you're singing an a cappella on stage, you can fit a lot more words and a lot more ideas in a line, which would be considered a bar. But you know, when music right. is four beats, so once the beat loop around, the timing is gone. You got to say it in that amount of space for it to be a bar. But when there's no music there, the bar can stretch different than your air, the way you hear it. So a lot of artists cram a lot more thoughts and words than right. you can when it's on beat. So that's why they're able to get these punches and these ideas off on stage when they're using a cheat code. But when it come to timing and putting it on beat, it's more difficult to get them ideas across. That's why they might sound doper on stage, but when you hear them on record, it don't register the same. Because they used to not write into beats. They used to just write in battle rap form. So when it comes to making a song and you got to write the music and think of ideas, melodies, flows, and other things that's not required in battle rap, it's kind of difficult. That's why you need to practice and you need to put in work. And some of them only put in work just battle rapping. So it's going to be impossible for them to just take one of them battle raps to the studio, get in the booth, say it, and it be a hit. That's
that
not
makes perfect sense, though.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. They do. I do watch those battle raps sometimes, and I'm like, God damn, that's a lot of words in that one loop, you know, one bar.
Yeah, it's
for sure. And that's the reason why a lot of battle rappers can't even ride a beat. Like, even when you do hear them make music, or if you listen to any of their music, it's slightly off beat because they so used to writing off beat that when they try to catch it, it's slightly off.
Now, do you think, like, you know what I mean? Do you think that's where a producer or someone like that would come into play?
It could be a producer, but it could just be them just studying the craft and practicing and putting in the work. Like, you know what I'm saying? You're going to have to put in work with writing the different beats per minute and stretching your mind out to learn how to do different flows. Like when I first came in the game when I was 17, I wasn't worrying about making a song. I wasn't signed. It wasn't social media. It wasn't like you could release your songs. So it was no reason for me to make songs. I just had bars. Anytime somebody wanted to hear something, right. I was singing the hottest shit. So that's all I was focused on. But once you got a deal, it don't matter if you can say the hottest shit. Now you got to make a hit. So now I got to transform myself. I got to reinvent myself. I got to figure out how to do this and make music. And it took me years. Some people think you could just snap your finger. That's what people want hip hop to be. They want you to just be able to write one rap and put it out and get millions. Or just go in the studio a couple times, make a couple songs, put it out and just blow. That's how people want it to be. They want it to be easy. But it's hard, just like any other thing that people do professionally. Like the NBA players is nice on the court, but you can't just snap your finger and get that nice. It takes years and years of practice and training and learning the game and just working on your game to get that nice. So I was 17 when I first got my deal, but my first album ain't come out until I was around like 21. So that's 4 years later, 4 years of just constantly grinding outside of writing just hard bars, but trying to work on making music. And it took time for me to develop. And even after my first album, I still was learning. So my second album, I'm still learning. I'm still growing. So what I could do now, I could never do when I first came in the game. But it wasn't no information or no line that somebody could tell me. It just came from grinding, working, and learning on your own. And that's why experience is important, especially in fields where you use your mind. Like, you know what I'm saying? Now, other things where you use your physical body, even though experience matters, that's why all the experienced people be the coaches and around the players. But you need your youth, you need your body to be young and healthy to do these physical sports. But when it's mental, like hip hop and writing bars, the more experience and the more knowledge you got and the more you've been through, if you stay on it, you'll be better than the dude that don't really got nothing to talk about. Only reason why the older dudes seem to fall off because they lose the hunger. They realize how shiesty the business is. They realize how many games is being played. And they get frustrated and they stop listening as much. They stop writing as much. They stop loving it as much. So that's the reason why they fall off, not because they not capable of doing it. If they was listening to rap every day like a young boy and writing every day like a young boy, then they would be even nicer because of the experience.
Well, they didn't know at the time, you know, we talked about this recently, how young some of the quote older rappers were in the late 90s who fell off.
Yeah.
Who right now, they fell off back, now they'd still be around, they'd still be in their prime, but they didn't know that there would be a future. It had been sort of described as like, yo, once you're old at all, or you drop one brick album, it's over. But like, that was only true in hip hop. In music in general, you can go on forever and ever and ever. And I think we're getting to a place now in hip hop where people realize, wait, you could still be nice when you get older. And so hopefully to like, your point, people
like
keep
Black
going.
Black Thought is a perfect example.
Right.
Black Thought is gotta, how many, he gotta be like, how old is Black Thought?
Black Thought's pushing 50.
He gotta be.
Yeah.
And he's burning niggas, yo. He's fire.
Because he's consistent, stayed
consistent
at it.
And
you know
just,
what I'm saying? Never stop working. So
I mean, the business can get to you though, man. It is frustrating. And you got to deal with a lot. You got to have an iron constitution to deal with the bullshit in this industry.
But you know what else, Saif? You know what else?
You got to be in it for culture reasons. Like if you in it for just business reasons and to get money,
right?
It's millions of ways to get money in the world. We just not informed on all of them. So 100%, a lot of people from the hood think they just got to play sports, sell drugs, or rap. Like they limited to the information that they got and what they think that you can do. But once you get in the business and you start rubbing shoulders, you start seeing all of these different ways to get money. And if you do get some popularity, whether you want it or not, people going to start offering opportunities to use your image to help their brand.
Right.
So you start seeing other ways to get money, and it might be easier ways. Ways that better your personality. And that's the reason why dudes be making different decisions other than just writing raps and staying hungry with music, because they see how much you get robbed, how little come out of writing music, and how little come out of going so hard with this, when I could put a little bit of energy over here and make way more.
Yeah.
And that's where most of the people heads is at. And I'm not knocking it. If you a businessman and that's the reason why you got in it for business, then 100%. That's the best decision.
But
if
I'm
you
not
strictly culture, if you strictly coach and you got in it for those reasons, then whatever the best business move shouldn't matter to you because you in it for culture reasons. And I think that's the decision that you need to make when you first start. What is the reason that you're doing it for? Is you doing it strictly for money, or is you doing it because you love the culture and you're going to follow the rules and regulations that come along with it?
You know what else you have to be, Saif, if you want to make it?
What's that?
So this was June 28th.
The first platinum ringtone.
First platinum ringtone? Wow.
First platinum ringtone. Wow, that's hilarious.
June 28th, 2005.
Damn, 2005. Fuck.
Can you tell us the story of that song, how it came together, and how much it changed your life?
Well, my first album was called Split Personality. And the first two singles, or the two singles from off of that album, was Hotel featuring R. Kelly and Get No Better featuring Mashonda, which was like two records for the ladies, top 40 commercial type of records. And that's the type of label I was on at the time, J Records. Those is the records that they love to push. It was easy for them to work those type of records.
Yeah.
But I came from the street, battle rap on mixtapes, burning it down. Anytime anybody bought me up a radio station or anything, I'm going crazy with bars. But when you hear my single, it don't match the energy that I was creating initially.
Right.
So my fan base was confused. Not the newer fans that just fell in love because I had a single and they heard me on the radio. They wasn't familiar with nothing. I'm talking about my core audience, the people that were supporting me before I got that single out. They was confused about the direction that I was going in. So I realized I needed to make a record like I'm a Hustler, which could bang in the clubs, bang on the radio, but still be hood, hard, like register to the energy that I was creating before I got a deal.
Right.
So that was my main objective, and it took a lot of arguing and fighting, and because once we made the record, you hear the chorus is nigga X, nigga X about me, nigga X, nigga X about. That's already like 6-7 niggas already just in the chorus. So they like, how can we possibly get this played on the radio? They'll never take this record. You don't hear it as nigga. And it's talking about hustling and selling drugs. They never going to play this. This is not it. You know what I mean? But I'm like, nah, this is it. So it's a fight, but I'm happy we got to put it out. Actually, they didn't believe in the record, so I ain't getting no radio support. And I'm talking to radio guys, so y'all going to understand this a lot. I ain't really get radio support like with the other records, so we just pushed it out to the mix show DJs. And once they got it, they just went so crazy with it, and they got such a crazy response just organically that I got the support a little behind, but it was a little late, you know what I mean? But that's when we got the video shot and we started to support the record. But it could have been even a bigger record than what it was if the people behind me believed in it from day one.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You're right, though. Jay Records, for people who don't remember, Jay Records was very R&B heavy. I mean, maybe Alicia Keys is the biggest artist in the history of the label, and that was really their bread and butter. It's not surprising that that's where they went. Did you talk to Hove about the sample?
They got a lot of successful artists. Like, you brought up Alicia Keys. Like, they got some of the biggest artists ever. But when you look at the rap side, what successful rappers did they have other than me?
Busta.
Like, I was holding it down. It's not really like they had a lot of successful rappers because they wasn't.
Yeah, it was you and Busta. Really, you and Busta were the main rap acts. And of course, they got Busta late. He'd already been established for a very long time. Did you?
Yeah, all the Busta's success came outside of Jay Records. His success ain't really do that much with Jay Records. Like, Busta a legend. That was my man. He was a legend even before he got with Jay Records. But I'm just saying, like, a lot of the work.
Yeah, they didn't develop Busta.
I was really like the only rapper under there that really was making some noise.
Did you talk to Hove about the sample or ever talk about the record with him?
We had to clear the record. Actually, me and Swiss was in the studio, and we had some whole acapellas, but we wasn't planning on making it a single. It was just for the mixtapes. So we was chopping up some whole acapellas. Like, when I originally made I'm a Hustler, I did a mixtape version. It's still out there on the streets. Sometimes even when I go to the clubs or to the radio station, some DJs will play that version instead of the real version.
What's but the difference?
The mixtape version, it was like two verses, and each verse was like, I'm not sure, but like 50 bars, like mixtape style. Like, I was just blacking out, just really going in with the bars, just rapping long.
Right.
So it took a long time for the hook to come back around. But I released it. It's a DJ name. Well, he a rapper, but he DJ too. His name Rampage. He down with Busta Rhymes. I just bought him up. He was in Philly going crazy with the records. So I gave him the record, and he was going crazy in Philly while I was in New York with the I'm a Hustler, the mixtape version.
Right.
So when I went back to Philly to the club, this one, Allen Iverson was out there. A lot of sports players, a lot of ballers was in the club. And it came on. Nigga X, nigga X. And all of them start standing up talking about nigga X, nigga X about me. They all bouncing around like they going crazy over the song. And I ain't never even hear it in the club. Like, so I was shocked that everybody knew it, that they was going crazy, and he pulling it back, and there's a movie in there. So I got so excited, I ran back to New York, and I'm like, yo, Swiss, I got to make this into a real record.
Like, a song,
like, shorten the verses, make it into a real song, because it's going crazy. The streets love it. And he like, yeah. And That's when I shortened the verses and made it into what is the single now, what's on the video. Those verses.
Saif, you know what I took from that story? Wow. And, I am embarrassed to admit I did not know Rampage was a DJ in Philly.
For sure.
Wait, which Rampage, the last Boy Scout Rampage?
You're talking this?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I didn't know that either. Richard Flatbush.
Speak up. It's one of the hardest starts to any song ever in history.
Shout out the Rampage.
Yo, I did not know that, Saif.
I didn't either.
Shit is so hard. Wow, shouts to Rampage.
Broke, I'm a hustler.
Wow.
I just want everybody to know he was the first DJ Planet. He broke it in the city. He had the city going crazy with it, and everybody followed after that. But shout out to Rampage. I was loved.
Yo, me and Saif love celebrating a DJ for breaking a record, boy. It's one of our favorite subjects.
Yeah.
Giving DJs their flowers for breaking records.
For sure.
That's my favorite. All right, well, listen, I'm not going to talk to someone who worked extensively with R. Kelly and not ask about R. Kelly, because beyond everything else there is with R. Kelly, I was always fascinated by his general bizarreness as an artist.
Whoa, what's happening here?
I'm gonna ask about R. Kelly and Hotel.
You about to bad talk my
no.
R. Kelly?
Well, Saif, I wouldn't go stand, be careful about how you even stand next to that part of the conversation. But I actually saw R. Kelly at Bonnaroo one year, and he did his medley of everything he did. And when he did Hotel, that shit was crazy. What was the process for that record? What was R. Kelly like to work with at that time?
Well, I was a super fan of R. Kelly. Like, my older brother, he like 11 years older than me. He like was in the streets heavy. He like raised me. And when he was taking me around the city and we was driving around, he was like a gangster. Like, you know what I'm saying? Used to box always with strap, beating niggas up, knocking niggas out cold. But he riding around playing R. Kelly loud, like system banging R. Kelly. And the girls used to be going crazy. Everybody used to be loving it. So that's the vibe I was on from a young boy. I just knew how much R. Kelly played a part in the hood, like how he was just turning heads from that. So when I got my deal, we was thinking about making a big single and featuring an R&B artist. So they was throwing a lot of names out there, like different R&B artists that was popping at the time. And all of a sudden they came up with, what you think about R. Kelly? Did you want R. Kelly on a joint? And I'm like, what? Hell yeah. Like, R. Kelly.
Is that even possible?
R. Kelly, like with me, this, like, y'all got to think, I ain't have Hotel out yet. I didn't have no records out yet. I'm just a new kid just... You know what I'm saying? Working. So to hear a name like R. Kelly that done sold all these records, made history so many times, about to do a record with me, I'm like, hell yeah. So they set it up and we flew out Chicago. Me and Swiss, we had a little talk in a hotel, and then we went to his studio, to R. Kelly's studio. It was a few people in there. We told them the idea of the song, because we already had the Hotel idea, like the direction of the song and what we wanted it to be called and all of that.
Wait, did you have your verses already?
Nah, I ain't had my verses. I just had the
concept and the idea.
The beat. Yeah.
Okay.
So before we got to the Hotel beat, like he was going through other beats, like a beat tape. And every beat that came on, he just started singing crazy ass choruses to every beat. Like soon as the beat dropped, he starts singing the chorus like he already wrote it, but it was just off the top, every beat. I never seen nobody do that. Like, I seen people do, like, here and there, but the every beat, he just kept coming up with new melodies that all sound like hits. So I was already impressed. And then once the Hotel beat came on, he just started going crazy. Actually, when he went in the booth, he laid a lot of stuff. Like, the original Hotel part was just a little part that we took from what he did. We later did a remix that I threw Trina on, and all of the remixes, like a whole different chorus, a whole different bridge. But he did that all at the beginning, like all at the same time.
Oh,
he
so recorded. You already had that on tape.
Yeah, and we still got a lot more. Like he went so crazy and did so many different bridges and choruses and directions just off the idea we gave him. And I'm like, yo, this nigga's a genius. So we just took that, what he did, and took the beat, and we left the studio. Well, before we left, actually, Twista came through the studio. This when I got a chance to meet Twista. And me and Twista was rapping. Twista was doing his fast shit. I was spitting my shit. Then we left. I went back to the hotel, and I actually wrote my verses to hotel, in the hotel, with Swiss in the room. I just wrote the verses, and that's how that shit came together. But that was the first time I met R. Kelly for that, you know, short period of time in the studio when we recorded the song. The next time I seen him is when he showed up to the with the mask on in my video shoot. I didn't think he was going to come to do the video, but he actually showed up. I was super excited. He had the mask on. I ain't understand why, but I ain't give a fuck. I was just happy he was there. So that was the second time I seen him, and that was the last time I seen him. I was supposed to see him again.
Really?
I was supposed to see him
again.
You never
performed the song.
Yeah, we were supposed to do it. He used to do it at all of his shows, like Rosenberg just said that he did it.
Yeah, I've seen him do it.
So we talked on the phone, and he let me know that he'd be performing the song. And he like, yo, everybody go crazy when I do the song, so I want you to come out. It was at Madison Square Garden when him and Jay-Z was touring.
Oh, my God.
So, that was the day that I came out. I was in Madison Square Garden. I was backstage waiting to come on stage and perform it with him when the whole situation happened.
Oh, when the shit went crazy? Yeah.
That was the first.
So you were waiting.
Oh, you was right there backstage.
You were waiting in the wings when the whole shit went down?
I didn't see him that day. I seen some of his team
and
some of the people that I was familiar with being with him, but I ain't actually see him yet when the whole situation happened. But that was the day that I was supposed to perform the song with him.
Wow. That's
so
crazy.
Actually, in my life, only met R. Kelly twice, the time we recorded the song and at the video shoot.
Well, you know what? All things considered, Cass, I think that worked out well for you.
For sure. It's a classic, man. It's never going to get forgot about. And I don't know about all the personal issues and situations that he's dealing with. Like, I don't know him personally, and I'm not an investigator. Like, I ain't do no investigation or nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know nothing about that. But like I said, I always respected his music, and it's a classic, and I'm happy I was able to get it done.
How did the Swizz relationship start? And like, Was this a straight management deal? Tell us the Swizz story.
When I was 17 years old, I signed to Rough Riders because I had the city on fire. I was on this radio show in a city called The Cypher. It was the Radio 1 station in Philly. So I was it was like a battle competition that they used to have on the radio 5 days a week. And I was the champion, so people would have to call up and try to battle me every night. And I was winning for so long that I got super famous in the city. They actually retired me and made me a radio personality to judge other people's battles because I was winning so much. But that's how I started getting backstage passes, started getting relationships, and people started to know about me from the radio show. But back then, this was before social media, so they only knew my voice. They didn't know what I looked like, or you know what I'm saying? So that's when I started running around the city, battling a lot to let people know that I'm this person from the radio. So once I started doing that, I had the city on fire. Swiss Father, TD, Terrence Dean, he came to the city. Like, they used to live in Philly, so they be passing through. He came through the city to get a cut, and they told him I was the hottest dude in the city. So they called me to the barbershop to rap for him. I rap for him, went crazy for like 45 minutes, made an impression. He took my information down, but I didn't think it was nothing because he wasn't like DMX or Jadakiss or somebody that I knew from Rough Riders. He just said he was Rough Riders, but I ain't know him. So I ain't think it was nothing. But a couple days later in school, I got a page from my mom. This one, beepers was out. This how long ago, you know, it was. Beepers was out. So my mom beat me while I'm in school. And that's rare. She would never do that. Like, if I'm in school, unless it's an emergency. So I called her back, and she said that TD, Swiss Father, called and said that he want me to come out in New York and have a meeting with Rough Riders. So that's how it went down. Wow. I came out in New York. I met Y. DNY is this, his brothers, TV brothers, is the CEOs of Rough Riders. So DNY is the CEO. So I met with Y. D was out of town at the time, but I met with Y, made an impression on him. Then D came a few days later, made an impression on them. And that's how I got down with Rough Riders. Not too long after that, they signed us. I brought two dudes from Philly with me, Shiz Lansky and Kyle Akbar. So we was in a three-man group, Larceny Family, under Rough Riders.
Oh, yeah, I remember that
Rough Riders, Ride or Die Volume 2, we on that, and Ride or Die Volume 3, we on that too. That's when they started to push us and, like, you know, work our material. But it was so much competition and so much going on over there that we wasn't getting enough attention. So that's why I started battling more to let people know, like, I deserve a position. And once I started doing that, I built the relationship with Swiss. He was like the biggest producer over at Rough Riders at the time, doing his thing. So he wanted to start his own production company, but he needed an artist. So he like, yo, the perfect artist would be you, solo, by yourself, not in the group. I just want you. So that's how me and Swiss started working. That's how I got out the contract with Rough Riders, because I was in a contract with them, just a production company contract. But that's how I got out that contract with them and got in a new contract with Swiss. And then I got an artist deal with G Records and released all the music that y'all know. So the production company was Full Surface with Swiss, and the deal was with Sony BMG, G Records.
Damn, I didn't know you signed the Rough Riders.
Yeah, I was signed the Rough Riders actually for like 3-4 years. I signed when I was 17. I was underage. Wow. My mom had to come sign a contract with me. That's how I know the age, because I was underage and I couldn't sign for myself. So I signed when I was 17, and I signed the new contract with Swiss when I was like 20 or something like that. And I released the project with G Records after we started working when I was like 21.
Wow. So Swizz's dad's the main connect to Philly, because Philly ends up giving both you and Eve. And Eve, of course, goes on to play a major role in Rough Riders history. It's a big...
Yeah, but Eve was with Dre first.
Oh, Eve was Dre, then Rough Riders.
Yeah, so I think that was like an Interscope switcheroony.
And Eve was way before me. Like when TD came to the city to meet
me,
she was already on. Yeah, she was already like doing stuff, had singles out, and already like, but well, I don't know if she had singles out, but she definitely had.
Yeah, she was on Rough Riders
with X. Yeah, she was doing like a lot of stuff. And when I got down with Rough Riders, I remember I was in the like, I got a girl that I'm gonna love forever. Like I was in that video. And the I don't even know you, but I hate you. Like I was at that video too. So I know when she was first putting in her work, I was there. Wow. But she was already there before me. But Rough Riders is not just TD, but a lot of them got ties in Philly. Like, you know, they used to stay in Philly, they used to live out there. So a lot of them got ties in Philly and be passing through the city here and there.
Yeah.
So I just happened to catch them.
What do you Do you still live in Philly or?
Nah, not right now. I don't live in Philly.
What do you think of the scene? What do you think of the scene or the game in Philly right now? Because Philly's always been a place where the talent has been immaculate, but they just don't seem to get it. And for lack of a better term, they don't seem to get it right.
Well, commercially?
Yeah. They fight. I know a lot of Philly people. I got a lot of Philly connections, and it's like they fight themselves on success.
Yeah, I think
it's a rough city, man.
Yeah, it is. It is a rough city. It's a real competitive city too. Like, you know what I'm saying? I think that's the reason why people be fighting a lot. It's like the crab in the bucket mentality over there. You know what I'm saying? And they say it's the city of brotherly love, but I don't know why. It's not really like that.
No. Like, no, my boy said it's the city of brotherly shove.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's... yeah. I did a record called The City of Brotherly Slugs, where I put a lot of, like, you know what I'm saying, a lot of Philly artists on there before. But it's a crazy city, but it's super talent there too. And it's crazy everywhere. I guess it just depends on what the attention is on, like what the media focus on and bring to your attention. Like, because it's negativity everywhere, people dying everywhere, people getting shot everywhere, rappers is beefing everywhere. It's just all about, like, you know, what they put their attention on.
Yes, that happens everywhere. I'm not talking about the media, and I'm not talking about the fucking the hood part of it. I'm talking like in the rap game. Like, it seems like, and I'm an outsider speaking on it, so I might not even know what I'm talking about, but it seems like there'll be so much talent and a lot of dudes get on. You know, there's you, there was Freeway, Beans, there was Petey, Meek,
Eve,
Philly's Most Wanted. Yep. The Roots is a little different. They did it a different way. Roscoe P, there's endless people that could fucking spit crazy. And then when it comes time to make some commercial records, it's like they get this feeling like they're gonna sell out, and they want to keep it so real. They don't want to sell out. You know what I mean? It's like,
well, you even see, even right now, like one of the, with Meek, Meek still seems to always have people coming at him, and he still engages in it. It seems like it's very hard. Like, yeah, to Sife's point, no one wants to lose that credibility.
I mean,
in
I
Philly,
remember when Meek was
like
the hottest shit in the world at that one. You know, at one point in time when Meek had, you know, the record that hold up, wait a minute,
Dreams.
Y'all about? You know what I mean, the hottest
Dreams and
shit.
Nightmares. Yep.
And I was in Philly doing a comedy show. And, oh, it was like a talent show, but I was like the comedian host. And I was like, yo, I say, yo, Meek's on fire. Y'all repping Meek? Nah, fuck Meek. We don't fuck with Meek. Meek whack. I was like, Meek's whack? He's whack. I don't know if that's the right term.
I mean, like most of them names that you name from Philly, like I did songs with all of them dudes. Like, you know what I mean? I done work with all of them dudes. So it's a lot of love in the city too. Like, I crossed over from my first single. Like, Hotel was a crossover record, telling over 100 million an audience a day. Like, it was like super big. Like, it crossed over just not just urban radio. Like, it was all over the place. And that was my first single. So then you got people like Jill Scott, that super crossover music. You got Will Smith. It's like people that do, like, you know what I'm saying, you got Lil Uzi right now. He putting out shit in his crossing. So you got people.
Yeah, he's everywhere. Yep.
You got people that do it big. It's just like, I guess, what you want to put the focus on at the time. You know what I'm saying? There's negativity and there's positivity. Yin and yang. One couldn't exist without the other. So it's just all about what you want to focus on.
I think also DC, because being from DC, I saw something similar on a smaller level, because we never had at the time, although DC's talent game right now is crazy, but at the time, back in the day, DC didn't have the talent Philly had. But I think all the cities that live in the shadow of New York, there is a pressure of that, Sife, because like New York, it felt like there wasn't it wasn't limited. There were times where there were 50 popping artists all from New York, because the labels are here, everything's here. Yeah.
The media.
I think when you're in one of the cities that is a big city but is slightly in the shadow of New York, there's just going to naturally be a competition to get there that's even more fierce, because it's a little bit more distanced, the idea of getting there. Yeah. In New York, if you're from the hood in New York, everyone knows someone who made it. There's so many cats who got on. And I just think it was harder in other cities. There weren't as many opportunities. But Philly's one of the most decorated ever.
You got to think, even to this day, is New York rap is beefing. Like, that's where it started at, in New York, and it's still to this day.
It's worse. It's worse now than ever. It's worse now than ever.
New generation, like young boys, that's beefing right now. Like, you know what I'm saying? So
no, it's worse now.
About what you want to put the attention on. Do you want to focus on the new young boys that's beefing and make it seem like New York beefing all with each other, or would you want to look at?
That's true.
What K-Slade just did, rolling 50 deep. And it's like, you know what I'm saying, a bunch of New York dudes all on the same track repping. Like, do you want to focus on that? Or like, it just depends on what you want to put your attention on at the time. That's an
No, I agree.
I moved around. I lived in New York, lived in Philly, lived in Jersey. Now I live in Atlanta. It's like the center of attention with hip hop right now. Wild artists out here. And it's just all about what you want to put your attention on, man. There's always going to be negativity and positivity. And especially when it's a business, it's like the entertainers and the creators don't control the business. So when you make it like that, it's going to always be chaos.
When you look back, and by the way, Cassidy's projects. He's dropped three projects over the last 5 months. Go stream them right now and support Cassidy if you want those bars. Before we let you go, you were in the, when you were just completely a commercial crossover star and you were at the All-Star Weekend and performing and at all these huge events, is there one particular event, weekend, time that you look back at as shit was like the absolute craziest that you have memories of? Where just like every time your record came on, you were in settings with, you know, fucking Allen Iverson and LeBron James and everyone in the world sort of. Do you have one particular moment that kind of sums it all up of how crazy shit got?
That moment ain't come yet. I'm still grinding. I'm still working. April 3rd, though, in Atlanta, I got a big battle coming up. RBE, okay. Rare Breed Entertainment, ARP, is me versus Hitman Holla. He a big-time battle rapper, and he doing other things like, you know, Wildin' Out, got other things going on.
Yeah, I know him from Wildin' Out,
so
yeah.
He like one of the more popular, bigger battle rappers, and we got an event coming up April 3rd. It's going to be crazy. I'm in the best shape of my life. This been all a setup, like even the battles I've been in previous to this, it's been all a setup for what's about to happen April 3rd. So I need everybody to tune in that's watching. It's going to be super crazy. I'm excited, and I can't wait.
All right, bet. So not only so go stream the Cassidy projects, but also make sure you tune in on April 3rd. Yo, Cass, thanks for hanging out with us for a little while, man.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate y'all. Salute y'all. Keep doing y'all thing, man. Bars is back. I'm here. Salute.
Bars is back.
Cassidy, thank you, bro. Appreciate it, man.
Bars is back. Yo, Cassidy,
thanks
thank
for
you,
having
bro.
Me, man. Nah, April anytime, 3rd man. Is called Max Out, man. Me versus Hitman Holla. And them three albums is on all platforms. Everybody stream it. Thanks for having me, y'all.
All right, man. Peace, Cassidy.
Easy.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen. Cassidy the Hustler. Very, safe. Very, very interesting career for Cassidy. The trajectory. Like I said, I didn't realize until we were talking to him, like, how interesting it is that he did all those things.
Yeah, and I didn't know the rough. I didn't. It's so weird that, like, I remember when Cassidy first came out. I remember... You know, there's that crazy story of that Rockefeller freestyle on Funkmaster Flex, where all the Philly dudes, where Jay introduced Beans and all those other Philly cats. And there's a story where they came on Hot 97, they burned it down freestyling, and then they went to the studio and Swiss brought Cassidy, because he was like, "Oh, you got Philly dudes rapping." And Swiss brought Cassidy in, and him and Freeway battled. And apparently, like, the Rockefeller dudes just had one of the greatest nights of their lives where they just killed it on Hot 97. And then Swiss bought some guy, and they fucking battled him in the studio. And that's the first time I heard of Cassidy, because it was like, yo, after they left here, they went to the studio, and Swiss brought his new artist. But I didn't know Swiss already, he was already signed to Rough Riders. You know what I mean? Like, I thought he just found him recently and was using him to, you know, as his new label was starting.
Well, listen, it's hard to remember, Sif. These stories are from years ago.
Wait, how long?
Years ago.
Yeah, these stories are from years ago.
So, I said that before. I wanted to tell you a couple stories before we put a bow on this thing. Okay.
All right, kick it.
All right, I'll tell you I'll go in order. Thursday night. I go for a walk. I'm talking to a friend on the phone on AirPods, walking the dog. Uh-huh. On the Upper West Side, walking down a side street, about to cross over West End back to where I live. So, you know, Sif, the Upper West Side, pretty chill at night. I go out at night a lot. When you get to West End and Riverside, it's like you're in the suburbs.
Yeah.
I'm crossing over West End Avenue, and I see... As I'm getting closer to the street, I thought I saw a guy standing next to like something on the ground. And as I get closer to about to cross the street, I'm like, that's not a thing on the ground. That's a woman on her knees looking like she's like praying on the street, right? And then the guy's like leaning over her. And I'm like, oh, it could be like someone sick and drunk, you know, but whatever it is, it's something, okay? And by the way, before anyone jumps in with the obligatory thoughts that you have about the story, from where I am, I have no racial identity. In fact, I actually still don't know the racial identity of the people that I saw. I don't know.
What does race have to do with this story?
I know I'm too haunted by the internet about saying any words out loud about anything. So you're crossing over the street, and as I get closer, I'm like, no, this is definitely a lady whose face is, she's on her knees, and her face is like inches from the ground. And there's a dude standing over her talking. Now, as I'm crossing the street, I see a tripod. So my brain, trying its best to come up with things, and I'm not that bright, I'm like, oh, they're shooting something. There's like a, they're shooting something for Instagram, or it's an indie film. Which in retrospect, it's like, what? It was 11 at night. There's only two people.
Yeah.
There's no lights. But it gets worse than that, Sife, because as I walk past them, making sure me and Barrick have a little distance, there's no camera on the tripod. So that's a problem.
Okay.
But the guy's not yelling.
Something,
No one's yelling, but he's talking to her, and she's on her knees, and she's not getting up. So I do what I do after knowing Sife Sounds for now almost 15 years. I mind my fucking business .com/ you're near your home. Yeah. Just keep going home. So I walk down towards my entrance, and I turn around and stop for a minute to watch. Cause now I've got like 80 yards. If this dude were to go crazy and start chasing me, he couldn't even get to me. I'd be in my building. I'm good. But I don't go inside because I am having a moral.
You see no one else on the street.
See, that's where we're getting to, Sife, because you know what I'm going to do, because I've learned, Sife, and this is why I told you the story, because I thought you'd be proud. Just because you're mindingyourbusiness.com does not mean you're going to do nothing. It means you're going to wait and see if there's community support. Like, are other people around and you can go, I wanted to hit someone with a, yo, you see this shit over here? Yeah. What's, does this look weird? Then we as a community can make a decision on what's next. But I'm not doing it myself with a man and a woman, because that could go so many ways. So as I'm standing there keeping my eye on it, talking to my friend and kind of telling him what I'm seeing, I see a guy come over, and he pulls a very Peter Rosenberg 2007 move. He stops right next to them, and I'm watching, and he goes in his pocket, and I'm like, what's he doing? He's got his golden retriever, and he's right next to them. And I'm like, why is he stopping next to them? This looks like a terrible.
Yeah, he didn't get the Sife Sounds training.
This guy did not get the Sife Sounds training. And then I figure out what must be happening is he's pulling out his phone. And then the next thing I see is the dude grab the tripod and sprint across the street.
Wow.
So Sife, my assumption is the guy who did not get the Sife Sounds training walked right up to them, said, what's going on here? Uh-huh. I'm calling the police. So at that point, I go, okay, good. Someone who does not follow mindyourbusiness.com took the gamble, called the police, and now I don't need to do anything. I'm going to go home now. But number one, what do you think of what happened there, and did I handle it perfectly?
We still don't know what was happening.
No, I've made up in my head now that I think they were both probably just high on something.
Did the girl leave after that? Or
no, it looked like the guy ran off, but the girl was still sitting there on her knees, effed up. But I'm not saying that I think she was beaten up. They might have just both
Did they look homeless?
So I took a picture from a distance, and when I zoomed in on the picture after, I realized the dude was wearing a very, like, crappy wife beater, you know. So if you want to completely judge someone, wife beater, mad tats, outfit looked like shit. It looked like he might have fallen on hard times. Yes, I would say that.
That's a weird one.
Because also, if they were just high, I don't necessarily want to be the person who's calling the police on them to get them thrown. Like, he might have not been being abusive at all. He might have been like, baby, get up. You're high. We need to go somewhere. And he's like, I don't know how to get her up. Like, it might have not been, but she also might have been in bad shape and need an ambulance.
Yeah, there's too many variables. Without seeing,
I'm gonna send you a picture, Sif.
Without seeing an actual strike, you know, him hitting her. You know what I mean?
Nothing close to a strike.
Nothing close.
Nothing close to a strike.
Oh, then you did the right thing.
You're sure?
I would have maybe got the doorman to call the cops.
So that was going to be my next move, but then I saw this guy clearly called the cops because when he ran.
But that guy, the tripod is a weird.
So Sif
is a weird part Sif, of it.
And I know everyone's going to ask us for this picture. I just texted you and Billy June the picture. It has the white guy who did not take the Sif sounds. Well, I think everyone's white, but it took the white guy who was doing the very white thing of "I'm calling the police, sir." You could see him on phone. The golden retriever, and then the shady dude.
Wait, what race are these people?
I think everyone's white. That's what you want. What is the race here? What about the dog? The dog is blonde.
The dog is so white, a white person.
The dog is the whitest dog that's ever lived.
Yeah, I think you did the right thing. If that guy didn't show up, I would say get the doorman to call the cops, because then that's what doormen are supposed to do. You're out of it. Your name's not in the mix.
That's right. Hey, yo, there's some ish going on out here.
Yeah, you don't have to go to court. None of that shit.
That's the key.
I'm just wondering if that guy with the golden retriever might have heard something more that you didn't hear. He might have heard something.
Well, he might have said, "Hey, are you guys okay?" And then the dude starts barking and being crazy, and he's like, "I'm calling the police." Yeah.
But also, that guy with the golden retriever, I mean, that shit could have turned where he ends up with a knife in his sport.
And I'm, as much as I care about the well-being of that lady, I'm not getting bear punted by a psychopath.
How about this? How about the fucking woman knife
that, by the way, that could happen too.
That could absolutely happen.
I'm not doing it. So, it was...
It's rough. It's a rough one. Yeah, I would definitely, yeah. If you live in a doorman building, like, hey, there's some weird shit going on over here. Maybe we should call somebody.
So story number two is shorter. Went to Jersey yesterday. I've been getting. I'm having a little. Don't even ask. A weird little kick of getting into baseball cards. I went to a couple card shops in Jersey. I stopped at a gas station. I go into the gas station to get a couple of waters. As I'm getting the waters, I see there's a food counter. When I walk in, someone's like, hey, what's up, man? I'm like, oh, hi. As I'm about to leave, a large gentleman with an accent that I would attribute to being a Jersey Italian guy says, yo, try some of our pizza. You want pizza? It's 11:30 in the morning, 12 o'clock. I was like, no, I'm good. He's like, no, on the house.
On the house.
So
on the house. You gotta get it.
And I look at the pizza and I love a good grandma, you know, square pizza. I'm a fan. So I'm like, my girl will be excited for a random slice of pizza. Sure.
She's going with you to get the baseball card.
Yes, she's in the car with the dogs. Little trip. Uh-huh. So the dude gives me a slice of pizza and he's got a couple other dudes there making food. They're like, yeah, we just started selling the pizza today. I'm like, okay, cool. And then I'm like, the guy's like, yeah, give it a try, you know, see what
so
you think.
So far, this sounds great. So, yeah. I want to know what the story is.
He goes, yeah, it's pretty, you know, and I'm like, okay, cool. I'm trying to, like, ask while I'm waiting. I'm like, so you guys just opened this place? And he's like, well, we've been here, but we're starting the pizza thing. And he goes, yo, well, where do you live? You live around here? What town you live in? I'm like, no, I live in New York on the Upper West Side. He goes, okay, in your neighborhood, you got any, like, vacancies up there? Like, for businesses? I was like... probably. I mean, it's post-pandemic. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some storefronts open. Yeah. He's like, all right, I mean, listen, you ever want to, you know, get a place? You know, hey, give him my number. Give this guy my number. And the guy's like, you want me to give
do they know who
are? No idea who I am. No idea that when he asked me for free pizza to just show him love, that me and my girl have a combined, like, 800,000 followers that I'm like, you chose great people to give free food to. So I wanted to reward them for the good choice they just made. So he tells the guys, like, yo, give him my phone number. And the guy's like, oh, you want me to give him the blah, blah, blah number? And he's like, yeah, give him that number. So the guy gives me the number, folds it up, gives me the pizza. And he's like, yeah, if you see any like storefronts open, you're interested in opening a pizza place, you know, something like that. I'm like, so do you do pizza? And he's talking about the guy next to him who cooked it, the quiet gentleman who was cooking the pizza. And he's like, him and his brother, they got places. And yeah, you know, I'm doing this. And I was like, okay. So am I wrong for assuming that this guy's cleaning money through pizza restaurants and wants to know if maybe he could open another one to clean some more money? Is that the correct assessment?
I wasn't even thinking that far. That makes perfect sense.
You just met me and you maybe want to go into business on a pizza place in Manhattan? What the fuck are you talking about?
I thought he recognized you.
None of it was about me. They had, and you'll be very proud to know, I didn't tell him who I was. I didn't give my phone number. I just took the pizza, took his number, walked out.
Thank God.
And then we're gonna, and this is why I was waiting to the end of the show. I'm opening a pizza place.
Another thing Camillo has killed.
Yes.
He has like three pizza places.
By the way, full circle. No, I gave Camillo the guy's number. And they're gonna open a pizza place together. Blend Slices on the Upper West Side.
No, Camillo's pizza places are just called Slice.
Yeah, Blends is restaurants. But that, Slice
but
is the pizza.
Because it's in Long Island City, the LIC is capital and Slice.
Is that what it is? God, he's great.
It's good pizza.
People love some Slice.
So, oh my God.
I thought you would enjoy both those stories. I'm glad that they paid off.
Okay, I got two little.
Oh, you do? Okay, here we go.
One, last night. I know we got to go. Welcome to One Up. Thank you.
Yeah, and by the way, I want to just end the show. So thank you to everyone who's blown up the Patreons. Please keep going. If you're someone now, again, week by week, you're waiting. Are they consistent? Well, another week has passed. Join us. Shout out to everyone who supported my 24/7 championship shirt, including Cypher Sounds. I got a buy from Luis Diaz.
You love it.
What a supportive, amazing friend.
Oh, did it say Luis Diaz when I bought the shirt?
Yeah, and I have your P.O. box.
Yo, that's a weird thing about selling shirts. I got a shirt right here.
Oh, very famous in New York.
Very famous in New York. Very famous NY.com. It's weird that people, I get the emails and I have everyone's address now.
You could send the mailers.
It's fucking
weird.
You
could send the mailers if you wanted to. All right, so thank you to everyone.
Weird.
Please keep supporting, rating, commenting, sharing the podcast. We really do need that. It affects the pod and we appreciate you. So that's all out of the way. Now let's wrap this thing up with whatever story Syph needs to tell me.
Okay, so last night, I did a show in Connecticut.
Okay.
And it was horrible.
Okay.
So last night, we did a show. It was empty. There was a couple of six black people, about one girl celebrating her birthday. She was 39. So everybody was like 39, 40. And then there was some other comics on the other side of the room and then like one other table. And no, it was dead. It was dead in there. But that was the early show. They're like, hey, sometimes the early show's dead. So we ended up just kind of talking to these black people. Like, and they're like from Bridgeport. And I was making all my Bridgeport jokes. And we were fucking with them. And they were cool, though. But we're like, oh, that show sucked. Then they're like, oh, the next show has more people. It had like three more people. Same table where the black people were the show before. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Like nine white, like some are Jewish, some are Italian, but that New York, Long Island, Italian looking, you know, like 27 to 30 year old type. And then it was like another couple and another four people on the other side and a couple other comics. It was dead. There was this girl, the host goes up and he's like, hey, what's up everybody? And this girl's like, what's up? And everything anyone said,
okay, she was one of those.
Say something. And there was no, and it's like in the Comedy Cellar, you get one, maybe two of those, and then you have a talking to, and then after that, you're ejected. No one said anything to them, on and on and on and on. So then when you're doing stand up and someone keeps talking, you try to address it, but you try to tell them to be quiet, but then it just kept going on. Every comedian was dealing with this. Me and my friend go up. And it's just, now they're drunk, now they're loud. I get into it with one of the guys, and I feel so horrible about it, but the Bronx came out of me. The Bronx.
Oh, well, and you've been dealing with stuff. You've been sort of, you know, so, depressed. You're recently obese.
So he goes, yeah, so he goes, so I don't care what you're saying, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yo, we're trying to do this, whatever, whatever. And he goes, well, say something. You're not, you guys ain't funny. You guys ain't funny. And I fucking, yo, bro, I lost it. I was like, we are fucking funny. We do this every night and get a lot of people to laugh. You're fucking ruining the show. You fucking ruined the show. How about that? How about that? And normally, we would get you kicked out, but you're the only people in here, so you're the show. So, you know, if you leave, there is no show. So we're trying to, as comics, we're trying to get stage time. You're fucking ruining it. And he goes, oh, you guys are not funny. I said, you want to turn this into something else? And me and Will are on the stage at the same time. Because we do like this two-man thing, my boy Will Sylvans.
Yep.
And we're like, you want to turn this into something else? We could turn this into something else real fast. And he goes, oh, yeah. I go, let's go fuck it. Let's go outside. Let's go outside.
Wait, you said let's go outside?
Let's go outside.
Scythe. Okay.
Let's go outside. And I'm like, I'm gonna bring this mic with me. I'm going to fucking bop you in the head.
So you're still going for a laugh somewhat.
No, at that point, no, and then, like, bro, it got so quiet. Yo.
And then what happened? How did it end?
And then he paused, and then he's like, oh, I'm really scared. I go, you should be scared. You should be scared. Let's go outside or shut the fuck up. And then the girls are like, no, stop. You're cute. You're sexy. We want to hang out with you. Can I come up there? And then, yeah, they had this fucking, they had, like, PVC piping with like this plastic curtain over it was like the COVID shield, but it only went up to our chest, so like the COVID is still going over the shield. I don't know why.
It's flying over the shield.
So the girl gets up and starts walking towards us, and she tries to come up on the stage, and I take the COVID shield and I move it in front of her.
Good move. Did it get laughs at least?
Not really. There was nobody there. Nobody. The comics were laughing. And then the guy who's running the show goes over to her and starts saying something. He's like, hey, can you go sit down? And then I guess, I don't know if it's her boyfriend, but one of the guys comes over and he kind of like suns the host. Not the host, the promoter. He's like, yo, I got this. And he like basically tells him like, don't talk to her, don't touch her, whatever. And then he like walks her back to the table. And now I'm like, yo, bro, I'm fuming. Like, I'm just like, I'm fuming because I...
So this show is completely gone. This is not even, like, now we're in just full sort of debacle
there's
mode.
There's no show. Like, we're just trying. So then now I'm like...
You're just fighting
I'm
with
like
people.
Enraged. This is just... But now also, I don't like when I get that angry. You know what I mean? So, like, now I'm embarrassed of myself. You know what I mean? Like, internally. I'm like, oh, I let this guy get control. You know what? I don't ever, you know... That I only try to be like that in life or death situations. So then it goes a couple more minutes and he goes, I'm sorry, man.
Wait, what?
The guy goes, I'm sorry, man. And I was like, all right, I'm sorry too, bro. I didn't mean to fucking.
Wait, you guys both openly apologized at the show? Everyone's so apologized.
But he apologized out of nowhere. He goes, hey, I'm sorry, man.
Wait. You're back on stage now?
We're always on stage. We're on stage the whole time.
Are you trying at this point to even do anything? Like, what's happening for the 2 minutes before he says, hey, I'm sorry?
No, like, yeah, we were trying to do jokes. We kept trying.
And he kind of interrupts and is like, hey, by the way, I'm sorry. Hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but we were saying something else to the girls. Like,
got it.
It was mostly talking to them.
Right, because it's only people there.
Yeah. And then, So whatever, the show's over. We're like, you guys ruined the show, whatever. So we go sit down. They all leave. And then the last guy, the same guy that came over and got the girl, he's the last one walking out. And the host of the show goes, hey, you with the brown jacket, tell all your friends to go fuck themselves. And I was like, okay, they're leaving. I don't know why. So the guy comes back. And the guy comes to the host and he's like, hey, man. We're leaving, man. Like we understand it was a weird night, but like you're taking it too far right now. And I was like, I agree with that guy.
So you've now switched sides.
You unnecessarily
brought it back.
Called out one of them while they're leaving.
That's unless you are trying to hurt someone or yourself, there's no need to say the word when someone's leaving. Unless you want something bad to happen.
Yeah, they're leaving. And I was like, and then I was like, fuck, do I gotta like, I thought we were out of it. And now do I have to help this guy? Like,
and but it ended?
And the guy was, but the guy was kind of big. And then I think the owner was up there, and the owner, because I think they had called the owner up because these people were so bad. And then the owner kind of just like, you know, shuffled them out. But it was a fucking night. And then, okay, and then the other night, I'm standing in front of the Comedy Cellar.
And then after that, you go home and look at Camilo's.
Yeah, yeah.
You go home afterwards and look at Camilo's Instagram, and you're like, what am I doing?
Oh, the girl that walked up to the stage, she was hot, too. She was hot. I was like, oh, man, this could go another way.
Oh, really?
Give me a little side piece. I'm standing in front of the Comedy Cellar. Two black guys walk by. They're probably like, I don't know, 35 or something. And he's like, yo, Ebro, what's up? And I go, no, so I just correct him right away. No. It's just the best way. I go, no, Cypher. And he's like, oh, yeah, Cypher. And then he comes back. Yo, my bad. He goes to give me a pound. I'm like, it's COVID, bro. We're not doing this anymore. And, yo, my bad. He goes, yo, I fucks with you, son. I fucks with you. I'm like, you fuck with Ebro or Cypher? Nah, you, son, Cypher. I fucks with you. He goes, you know why? This is what I was trying to look up. I know I wrote it down, but I can't find it. He goes, You
I know where this is going.
You're bigger than you should be, but still you cool with us.
You're bigger than you should be.
You're bigger than you should be, but you still cool with regular people. And I was like, are you saying that right?
Yeah, I don't even understand. So is he saying you're bigger than you should be?
Yeah. I think he was jumbled. He was all jumbled up. But even just the way he said it, and my boy that I was with just starts dying laughing because he's like a new intern, so he's never seen this part of like the radio fans that say wild shit. You know what I mean?
I have a question for you. I don't get happy when people call me Ebro on the street.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, given your... how things played out at Hot, that it makes you particularly happy.
Doesn't make me happy at all. But
does it? It doesn't bother you though.
Rosenberg.
Why does that? That's the one that shouldn't bother you. That makes sense.
Because I understand the confusion with me, Ebro, Enough,
okay.
Envy, okay. Camilo. We're all like light skin, Latino looking, or black and white.
Right.
Mix.
Okay.
You know what I mean? All of us. So when people call me Envy or Enough, I get it. When they say Rosenberg, I'm like, what looks Jewish about me?
Well, your hair, you kind of have a Jew fro at times. You got the curls. You could look like a Rosenthal brother if you let it grow out. You could be Josh Rosenthal.
That one I don't get. Oh, you know what's so crazy? We got to go. Wanup is over. Wanup is dead. In the bathroom of that comedy club last night, it was like one of those Irish pub kind of bars, and there's pictures all over the entire club of like just like New York restaurants and bars. In the bathroom, when I walk into the bathroom, right in front of my face is a picture of Dennehy's, the Irish pub that was up the block from Hot 97, where Ebro took you and me.
Yeah.
To tell us.
Yes.
He was putting us together and giving us a show, and basically where we.
Yeah.
Basically the birth of Juan Epp.
But it was
of Cypher Sounds and Rosenberg.
Great, great burgers there, by the way.
And I took a picture of it. I'll send it to you. It's
that
a
is
picture
so weird.
Of fucking Dennehy's.
Oh,
that,
yeah,
you know,
no,
that's
I
not
didn't
even
realize
there
that,
anymore.
But it makes sense. Delicious burger.
It's not there anymore.
Delicious on an English muffin. I fucked with that burger. That's a great call.
Oh.
Fucked with that burger. Yo, that's crazy. Hey.
Fucked with that.
Goodbye. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you for everything. Billy June, you suck. And we appreciate all of you.
Peace and blessings.
One love.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.